Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I have the honor of interviewing Dr. Gabriel Pardo. He is a physician and a scientist that aims to provide comprehensive care to individuals with MS through a multidisciplinary approach. And he also participates in clinical research at his center. He is the director of Oklahoma Medical Research Foundation, also known as OMRF, their Multiple Sclerosis Center of Excellence. On today's episode, we talk about smoldering MS, new terminology that explains worsening of function without changes on an MRI, aging out of disease-modifying therapies, and the effects of BTK inhibitors. The big question is, how does someone with MS actually improve their mobility, strength, energy, independence? The list goes on. My name is Dr. Gretchen Hawley, physical therapist and multiple sclerosis specialist. Welcome to the Missing Link podcast. Tune in as I share the top strategies and exercises to help you gain control over your life with MS using research-driven insights and advice from top industry experts. Whether you're newly diagnosed or have had MS for over 30 years, whether you have relapsing MS or progressive MS, this podcast is for you. You're sure to feel empowered and inspired after each episode. Ready? Let's dive in. Dr. Pardo, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Gretchen, it's a pleasure to be here.
Do you believe that people with MS should always stay on, if they're on a medication, they should stay on a medication, or do they age out? And is there that age where you say like, no, okay, we're done?
That is an important question for which you do not have a specific answer. But yes, so it's been a dilemma and a debate in the MS community, right? Do we need to treat patients for their entire lives, especially as they're aging, right? So patients that are stable and they're in their 60s, 70s, 80s, is it still necessary to keep them on these treatments that are having an effect on the immune system? The philosophy behind that is that if we look at the natural course of the disease, it does tend to naturally, without us doing anything, to have a reduction in the frequency of acute inflammation, so relapses, new MRI lesions, those tend to go down over time naturally. If that were the entire story of MS, then we'll say, well, yeah, at some point in time, I guess we can stop treatment and there is no harm. But there is a second process through which patients accumulate disability or deficits in MS. It's not only the consequences of the acute event, the acute inflammation, but also this concept of a underground or background smoldering inflammation, even neurodegeneration that can account for a slow progression of deficits over time. Now, we realize that our current therapies are more effective at controlling the first component and not so good at controlling the second component. This is a big area that we still need to improve and we're doing research. But in that sense, then one could argue that the treatment is necessary long-term, even beyond the age of 60 or 70 or 80, depending on the circumstances, to try and guarantee the best way possible. Not only that we continue to reduce the risk of acute inflammation, but to minimize the potential progression. So this is an issue of debate. You're going to have practitioners that will take one approach or the other. There was actually a study that was done a few years ago that was supposed to give us the answer. Everybody was very enthusiastic about the results of the study, and it will tell us if it's okay to stop treatment on patients after the age of 60. And the results came out, and it's like, well, we really do not know. It might be okay, but we do not have all the evidence. So it kind of left us in the same position that we were before. So all that to say that we do take that approach on certain individuals, sometimes depending on a lot of different factors. This is so individualized, this decision. But individuals that perhaps are over the age of 70, and I'm talking very personally of how I approach this, that have had stable disease for a very long time, that their MRIs have not changed, that they have not accumulated significant disability, and or they might have other comorbidities that complicate the management, that one could say, it's okay to put your medications on hold, your specific MS disease modifying therapy medications on hold, with the caveat, and this is always the caveat that I put forth, that we continue to do very close monitoring of everything. Stopping treatment doesn't mean we're done with your MS. On the contrary, now we have to enhance our ability to monitor how things are evolving so that we can identify early on if there are changes, new changes that would warrant saying, let's go back on treatment because this is not heading in the right direction.
I like that caveat because I do think a lot of people who hit that age and decide to go off of medication do feel like, okay, I'm done. You know, my MS is managed and now I'm just going to move on. So I love that you mentioned that. So there's a lot of involvement in research for newer disease-modifying therapies. And one of them currently is BTK inhibitors. Mm-hmm. And that has a different approach, as you know, from the current disease-modifying therapies. Is that one that you feel, if it continues through clinical trials and it is, we decide it's a good one to use, are BTK inhibitors something that you would imagine you'd continue using regardless of age? Does that affect smoldering MS more than what we currently have?
That is the expectation. So because of the mechanism of action, how BTK inhibitors work, we believe that it will be able to target the two different mechanisms of disease because it has an effect on B cells, and B cells are part of the adaptive immune system of the systemic immune system, meaning the cells that are kind of free flowing throughout your body, right? They're the surveyors, they're trying to get rid of infections, virus, bacteria, bad things. But those are the same type of cells that have a negative effect in the inflammatory process of MS and can create damage. So we have had this approach of suppressing certain types of cells of the immune system as a very effective management of the disease and reducing the presence of inflammatory activity. So the BTKIs also have that effect on the B cells and hopefully reduce that hyperacute activity of the immune system, the relapses. But at the same time, that it also is part of the process that activates the cells within the brain, within the central nervous system. We call them microglia. Those are like the resident innate immune cells in the brain that we believe are the ones that perpetuate inflammation, creates this long-standing low degree, but persistent inflammation that is responsible for the progression, the slow worsening over time, even if you don't have acute relapses. So if the trials show that indeed these medications have a good effect on the acute inflammation, at the same time that we're able to have an impact on the smoldering inflammatory activity, or what has also been labeled as PIRA, P-I-R-A, progression independent of relapse activity, then that we might have a group of drugs that certainly will add benefit in the management of multiple sclerosis. As you mentioned, we need to find out that from the clinical trials. The clinical trials are still underway. We have multiple BTKIs being studied in multiple sclerosis, and we hope to learn the results sometime next year in 2024. That should be the earliest that we will be able to see those results. And if the trials show that indeed we have a beneficial, meaningful effect on both of those components, certainly that will bring the BTKIs to the forefront of options for the management of multiple sclerosis.
Yes. And do you think it would be a BTK inhibitor in addition to a disease-modifying therapy, or would that replace the disease-modifying therapy they were currently on?
As it is designed right now, it will be a replacement. So we'll switch them from the current disease-modifying therapies to that one, because that's how it's being investigated. It's being investigated as a monotherapy. But it all depends. If we find, for example, this is hypothetical, right? But if we find, for example, that the medications are good at controlling the smoldering inflammation, but not so good at acute inflammatory response, then can we use an agent, a disease-modifying therapy that is good at that, and then supplement with the BTKI either concomitantly or sequentially, use one to shut down acute inflammation and then follow that with a BTKI. Those will be things that we need to try to find out later on according to the results of the trials. And not only the results of the trials, but if and when approved, our real world experience with these medications. We'll see how that applies to our patients. And I'm sure that we'll be able to come up with strategies to try and use them the best way possible. That can include, again, the combination therapy, if that is feasible, and if we study it appropriately and determine that it's safe to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a few clients who are in clinical trials for them, and they're very excited just to see what the results say. Can you just briefly explain, we've mentioned the phrase smoldering MS a few times, and that was one of the big conversation topics at the annual MS conference this year. If someone hasn't heard of that, can you explain what that is and who is it happening in?
So we believe it happens to everybody, right? And I was referring a little bit tangentially before, but let's expand on that. The fact that we have two mechanisms of disease or two pathophysiological processes, I like to use these fancy words because they make me sound more important, but nonetheless, these mechanisms of disease, we have identified indeed, as we have conceived them as for the longest time, that the immune system creates these attacks against myelin, right? It's an acute event because you might be fine today and tomorrow you wake up with a little bit of a deficit that worsens throughout the day or several days and then it reaches a maximum deficit. We can correlate that with an MRI that shows an active inflammation, a small area within the brain where you have that problem. And we know that this is the immune attack from the peripheral immune system, the one that is free flowing through your body, that gains access into the brain, misrecognizes myelin as something that is foreign that needs to be attacked, creates this attack, this inflammation, cells and chemicals come in, they destroy the myelin, sometimes they destroy the nerve cell, and because of that you have damage, but you can start having some improvement as the myelin gets repaired by the cells that are created, which are called the oligodendrocytes, and then you will have some degree of recovery that can be complete and we're good, or it can be partial. And that's how you can start accumulating disability, an incomplete recovery from acute inflammatory event. But with the advent of highly effective medications, where we have been able to kind of shut down that activity, it's like, we don't see relapses, we don't see new MR activity, but guess what? Patients still come to us and say, "But I'm not the same as last year, doc. You're telling me I haven't had relapses, agree. You're telling me my MRI has not changed, agreed. Why is it that I cannot walk the same distance as before? Why is it that I am having more problems going upstairs than before? Why is it that I am not performing as well in my work as I was before? Something has changed. I have worsened." So that is what we have then defined as PIRA, progression independent of relapse activity. So what is causing that progression if we're not having new acute inflammation? That is where the concept of this smoldering inflammation is coming into play. We have some indirect evidence that this is taking place. This is difficult to study, and it's one of the problems that we have in trying to understand how the medications might have an effect on that. But there are a couple of things that we can see, for example, in MRIs, and this is evolving science, but something called PEARLS, which speaks to the fact that the lesions can increase in size over time, and that this edge of the lesions is an active inflammatory area and that is extending. And we all see that with what's called paramagnetic rim enhancing lesions and the cells or slowly expanding lesions. So PEARLS, PRLS, and cells, SEL. Those are the two radiological correlations to this concept of smoldering inflammation that is growing. Now, probably there's more than that. We also know, for example, that there is the creation of these clusters of cells, specifically B cells in the meninges, which are the tissues that cover the surface of the brain, and that their location can have a direct effect on damage to the underlying gray matter underneath that those structures, those follicles, as we call them, and that all of these processes are perhaps responsible for that smoldering inflammation, that slow progression, and that is something that, despite our current therapies, we have not fully controlled and that we need to pay more attention to and come up with treatment strategies for.
That was such a great description. I think it was easy to understand, which this is a concept that is not necessarily easy to understand. But I personally love that, A, this conversation is happening, like that smoldering MS is now a thing, but B, that there's a name for it. And Professor Gavin Giovannoni has been talking about smoldering MS for a while now, but a lot of people didn't know it existed, but it's becoming more streamlined now. And I'm really grateful for that because so many of my clients are experiencing that where they do feel like they're progressing, but the MRIs show that they're fine. And I think that having a name for it can make it easier to understand. It can make it feel like, okay, it's not me. I'm not making this up, or I'm not experiencing this for no reason. So I really like that this research is happening, and that whether it's smoldering MS or PIRA, whatever it is, it's actually measurable now and we have a name for it.
Now, let me throw another acronym for you there. So we can talk about RAW and SAW. RAW, R-A-W, SAW, S-A-W, relapse-associated worsening for the acute events, and SAW, smoldering-associated worsening for the slow progression. So we can have RAW and SAW terminology, but I think it makes it easy to understand. Yes,
I was just typing it down as you were writing it. I don't know. Maybe it's just my personality, but like, if you can tell me there's a name for something, I'm so much more or less likely to feel like something's my fault or that it's all in my head. Right. Like, no, it's a thing. There's a name for it.
Yeah. Patients tell me that. I mean, it says, well, you know, doc, I really thought it was all in my head. And I tell them, well, it is in your head. That's right. Where MS is after all, but you're not making it up.
Right. I think that's a good clarification. Yes. Well, this has been so helpful. I really appreciate your expertise, your insights, sharing all of this with us. If our listeners do want to either find you, maybe work with you, or just hear about what your center is up to, what are some resources on where they can find that information?
Oh, sure. So, I mean, our website, omrf.org. The institution also has a Twitter account. So that's at omrf. Or personally at Doc4MS, DocForMS. That is my personal Twitter account where I periodically update the account with some pertinent information and sometimes some fun stuff.
I agree. I love following your account. It's very informative, but in an easy to understand way.
Very good.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. I really appreciate it.
Gretchen, it was a pleasure chatting with you anytime, any day. Happy to do it.
Thank you for listening to today's show. I am so grateful to have you as a listener. If you'd like extra resources, such as a video of one of my seated exercise classes, my favorite core exercises, and the opportunity to ask me your questions, head to missinglink.com/insider. That link will be shared in the show notes along with links to my social media handles. If you loved this episode and think a friend or family member with MS would benefit from listening, please go ahead and text or email this podcast to them right now. Sharing this podcast will help me educate and empower as many MS warriors as possible. Thanks again for joining, and be sure to tune in next week for another episode of the Missing Link Podcast.